Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, you're at kptz.org. The website is more than just a way to listen to today's offerings. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town, and you can sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who is the woman who takes your money at the dump? Yet another load of not-so-precious stuff. Who is that young mother taking her squirming toddler to a playdate at the community center? And who are the guys carefully building wooden boats down at the Northwest Maritime Center? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people. Your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today, my guest is Brian Koo, who's the executive director of EDC Team Jefferson. For those of you who aren't familiar with the term EDC Team Jefferson, it stands for the Economic Development Council of Jefferson County. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hi, thanks, Marianne.
Before we get talking about the Economic Development Council, I'd like to start with a little bit of your background. Tell me, are you a Port Townsend native, born and bred right around this part?
You know, I'm not. I'm a transplant to the area, and those who know me and have met my wife understand what brought me out here. I met and married a gal from a town called Port Angeles, Washington.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, but where were you born?
I was born down in California at Beale Air Force Base, which obviously lets known that I'm a military brat.
A lot of military people move around a lot, did you?
We did. Not as much as others, but we ping-pong coasts a bit when I was young.
And where did you end up going to high school?
I ended up going to high school where I spent the bulk of my years, which was in Portland, Oregon. I'm a proud graduate of Franklin High School.
I see. High school is often a pretty formative time for people. And your peers in high school, everyone gets pigeonholed into, you know, he's a geek, he's a jock, he's a whatever. What would they have said about you?
I have no idea because I had a foot in so many different things in high school. I was a band geek and also played football.
So what instrument did you play?
I played the trumpet.
And football?
Football, I was a woefully underskilled tight end and defensive end.
But you're a big guy, so.
That's what got me on the team. Absolutely.
Okay, so some kids make up their mind really early on what they want to be when they grow up. Were you one of those kids?
Definitely. I grew up a military brat in the Air Force. I was pretty confident from a very young age that I wanted to be a pilot.
That's a cool thing.
Yeah.
So what happened?
In my freshman year in high school, I got pretty sick. First thing to go was my vision, and then I lost a lot of weight, went to the doctor. Actually, first went to an eye doctor, and he said, half jokingly, either you need glasses or you're diabetic. But either one was kind of disappointing because either one would have precluded me from joining the military.
Yeah.
But spoiler alert, about a week later, I got an official diagnosis of being a type 1 diabetic.
Wow.
The joke in the family is there's no other diabetic, so it's that, you know, milkman.
Yeah. Well, that must have been pretty devastating for you.
That was pretty rough, you know. I was a freshman in high school. I had a strong sense of my trajectory as far as what I wanted to do, and so that brought it to an abrupt conclusion. I have a great family, very supportive, supportive group of friends. In hindsight, I'm kind of surprised I got through it as easily as I did, although there's nothing easy about, you know, managing a chronic disease like diabetes.
No, I would think not. Well, what happened? What was the transition?
I jokingly told myself, at least now I can be rich, because I certainly wasn't going to be being a military or even a civil aviation pilot. And I was doing okay and throughout my career path until I got bitten by the nonprofit bug. But that's another story.
Well, you're getting ahead of yourself here. I've still got you in high school right now.
That's right.
So did you have any jobs?
I did. I had a few jobs in high school. The first one I had, at least tax-paying job, as I call it, was as a dishwasher for a retirement community in my neighborhood. And I got to tell you, to this day, that was one of my favorite jobs.
But you also told me you worked at the airport.
I did. So thanks to my mom, she somehow sourced a marketing internship job at a company at Portland International. And so I started there as a marketing intern.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
And that really gets you interested in marketing?
It did. I can definitely look back on that and say that really laid a path for me in getting a marketing degree and doing marketing work over the years, marketing and sales. I can definitely say that led to where I am today, believe it
well,
or not.
So you earlier told me you were focusing on going to one of the academies, perhaps, mm-hmm. in order to be a pilot, but that was obviously out of the question with your diabetes. Did you know that you still wanted to go to university?
You know, I never really questioned that in my mind, whether that was heavy-handed parents or I recognized opportunity. I definitely knew I wanted to go to college. I didn't have a strong sense even my senior year of where I wanted to go, but I ended up at Portland State, still in town, and what an incredible experience there.
And what was your major?
My major there was business with marketing degree and had a minor in communications.
I see. That's convenient.
Yeah.
So were you still working at the airport during college?
I was. So that marketing internship a few years prior, got to college, that turned into a pretty cool job for a high schooler, which was aircraft detailer.
Oh,
so
cool.
I was washing rich people's planes for them. This is back in the 90s and had a company pager, so I felt pretty...
Did you meet any of these rich and famous people?
I've been fortunate to have met a lot of folks over the years. Where I worked at Portland International, the rest of us fly commercial aviation, Delta and United and whatnot. The rich and famous don't.
Right.
And so I worked at a space where civil aviation folks or private pilots would come in, but also the rich and famous.
And so name drop a little bit.
Okay, all right. So one of the coolest interactions I had was with Benjamin Netanyahu.
Wow.
I mean, he had been prime minister at the time. Another one, of course, Madeleine Albright. I never got starstruck in the moment, or not very often, but that was one where afterwards the profundity of that interaction really fell on me. One of the coolest ones was a small twin-engine plane. It was a Beechcraft Baron that flew in, and myself and another coworker went out to greet it, and door opens up, and it's Han Solo, man. It's Harrison Ford.
Whoa.
Had no idea he was coming in, but there he was in the flesh.
That's really fun.
That was cool.
Fun thing. So when you graduate, were you one of those people who was fortunate enough to have a job already lined up, or did you have to scramble?
When I graduated college, I was still working with the aviation company. I'd been working for about 10 years. It took me a little longer to get through college than the four-year program, but that's all right. When I graduated, I was already in a management position. I really had a leg up over some of my colleagues just starting their careers. I had been working on mine, right, wrong, or otherwise, and I feel very fortunate to have had that opportunity.
That's great. So you just went more full-time with them.
Absolutely. Well, foolishly, I was full-time just about the entire time.
I see. Yeah. So you were doing sort of college part-time and working full-time.
It was an ebb and flow. Yeah.
But you ultimately got the piece of paper, right?
I got the piece of paper, got through it. I'll credit my now wife with really motivating me. We had met prior to my graduating, and that was all the kickstart I needed to finish that up and start my life with her.
You mentioned at the beginning that she was originally from Port Angeles and wanted to move back close to home. Is that basically?
Yep. She's a self-professed homebody. So when we met and prior to getting married, I jokingly call it her prenup agreement. She said, I want to settle down where I'm from, which is the North Olympic Peninsula. And being a military brat and having spent enough years in Portland, I was fine with that.
Had you spent any time up here before meeting her?
I had visited about 4 or 5 times, and I kid you not, it was socked in every single time. So my now father-in-law kept telling me there was these beautiful mountains behind the clouds, but I
never
believed him until years later.
at some point you left the aviation company and you and your wife moved up here. Did you have a job lined up?
No, and actually we did a brief stint down in Pensacola, Florida, where my parents live. I had talked her into, before we settle down, let's go down and enjoy some sunshine and be near my family, knowing that we would settle down up here. We were down there for about 6 months, but it culminated in Hurricane Ivan blowing through town. And if you didn't hear, it was quite the event. So my wife was feeling like a fish out of water already, and the hurricane was just the right impetus to head north.
Let's head north.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you packed everything in a U-Haul and
yep, exactly.
drove up here.
We had schlepped our stuff across the country but 6 months prior, and we did it again.
And didn't you also have a baby by then?
We did. Yes. Our first son, Liam, was born just prior to us leaving Portland. Hmm. So that was part of the motivation to be near my folks for a brief time, and they definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah. So you arrived back here and stayed for a while with the in-laws.
Yep. We did a tour of duty with the in-laws up here, but I couldn't be more grateful. That definitely gave us a foundation to get settled. On the drive up, I didn't have any job lined up, but we just knew that this is where we wanted to be. I got a call back from an application I had put out there, and it happened to be for a bank. They were looking for a sales guy, and my thought was, sure, I can sell that.
I can do that.
No sweat.
And when you got here, you went in for an interview.
I did. I went into an interview with the folks there, actually in Port Ludlow. There's a branch right there. That was where my banking career started.
Which bank was the first one?
This was American Marine Bank, if anyone remembers that one. About circa, let's see, that was 2004, 2005, the bank was putting in-store branches in Safeways across the North Olympic Peninsula. I was brought in to manage one of those branches, the one that was in Port Angeles.
Well, so that must have been a challenge.
That was a unique experience, but I was incredibly grateful for the opportunity to have learned in that a bit of a crucible environment. And there's nowhere to hide when you're sitting in an in-store branch. That was very unique and interesting. I think I can say pretty strongly that our communities out here are not the type that are the most receptive to doing their banking in the public eye like that.
Huh. Why do you think that is?
I couldn't put a finger on it, but I guess a theory I would propose is just we've enjoyed a different pace of life out here, and I've come to embrace that over the years I've been here. So the convenience value proposition isn't perhaps as great because of that pace. So what you give up in favor of convenience is a lack of privacy if you're doing your banking right behind the checkout line.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. So American Marine Bank ended up folding, right?
They did. That was after I left.
Okay.
I don't believe I had a hand in that.
So. It wasn't your personal doing.
Any regulators are listening. I don't think I had a hand in that.
Okay. So where'd you hop to next?
After my tenure at American Marine Bank, I had a family friend who was in HR at First Federal over in Port Angeles. They had a new position open up in their marketing department. I was kind of hemming and hawing it, but I got a kind note from the then CEO. She and I were working together on the United Way campaign, and she made an encouraging word, and that's all it took. So I applied, was fortunate enough to get selected, and joined the team there in the marketing department.
Okay. And were you at any other banks?
I was. So fast forward a little bit. So I did a couple years in the marketing department at First Fed. Then they basically said, listen, Brian, you don't belong in a back office. You belong in a front-facing role. So apparently I'd been clawing at the walls or something, but they chose me to be a part of a training program to become a commercial loan officer. And I did that for a few years at First Federal through a very transitional time, not only for the organization, but also for the industry and the economy.
Well, yeah, based on the timetable you're talking about, you were running into the Great Recession, as they call it.
Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah. So were you with First Fed during that crisis time?
I was during the onset of what's come to be known as the Great Recession. What a unique learning experience. I hadn't gone through an economic downturn before, whereas more seasoned bankers had seen a flavor of it before, but nothing
to that. It must have been really hard because, Lord knows, hundreds of thousands of businesses went belly up during that period of time.
Yep.
And I would bet you some of your clients did.
Unfortunately, I had a couple clients who weren't able to pull out of it, and those were very unpleasant realities of the job. Is working with a client from birth to death on the latter half. That was pretty challenging to work through, but I couldn't be more grateful for having had that opportunity and learning experience. I think that's made me a better banker, lender, and just someone who's able to evaluate risk.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today is Brian Koo, who's the Executive Director of the Economic Development Council in Port Townsend. Brian was just talking about how he became a commercial lender as the economy was tanking. He worked in commercial lending both at First Fed and Columbia Bank before switching over to the nonprofit side. So you've got to tell me, how did you make the transition between commercial lending into the nonprofit world?
Boy, talk about heading down the rabbit hole. I was at Columbia Bank and enjoying life. Nothing was wrong. Everything felt good and I had a good job, good colleagues. But then an associate in lending was looking to transition out of his role. He worked for a nonprofit lender called Craft 3. He was essentially tasked with finding his replacement. And having talked with him, I had no interest whatsoever to jump into a role like his because he dealt with all the more difficult loans. Not that they were bad loans or bad people, but they required more touch. They were higher risk loans that banks couldn't or wouldn't do. And he was the one that was sometimes able to help those out, which is great from a mission fulfillment standpoint. But in terms of workload, there was nothing attractive about that.
Yeah, tough work.
Right. It's like, thanks, but no thanks. At one point, he said, Brian, you're the only lender I know that's crazy enough or right enough or whatever the right term is to even consider this. And so I agreed to meet with the CEO and I showed up ready to talk about my resume and what kind of fruit I would be if I was a fruit or whatever, all these, you know, standard interview questions. And it was nothing near that. It was one of the most taxing but stimulating conversations I've ever had with anyone about economic development and building resilience in communities. And that was my first taste of Craft 3 and their mindset and their mission. And needless to say, I was pretty intrigued after that discussion. So I was very open to the next steps.
So Craft 3 lends to underserved, if you want to call it that, communities like minorities, women, veterans. And this is a huge topic, but I'd like you to shorthand it. Why is it hard for them to get regular loans? Why do we need organizations like Craft 3?
There's two kind of general populations there. There's one that are the unbankable or the pre-bankable. And these are startup businesses, businesses that have weathered through an economic hardship but have fallen out of parameters, if you will, of what a bank is able to do. But the other population there, not overlapping with the underbanked necessarily, are those minority populations. So minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, things like that. So Craft 3 excels at touching all those bases. The most basic understanding of what is a good fit for Craft 3 is something that a bank is unable to do. That doesn't mean Craft 3 can, but they really target filling that need, that gap between a project that's truly non-financeable to where a bank will leave off in terms of what they're able to do. That said, Craft 3 definitely has a focus that's driven by their source of funds and what's important to those sources to lend into those marginalized sectors in our society.
Yeah, well, you used a really good example before when we were talking about Native Americans and fishing boats. Can you explain that?
Craft 3 does a lot of work in Indian country. And one of the reasons traditional banks don't lend as much in Indian country, and if you can think of the example of a native fisherman, because non-native communities have one basic measurement that occurs annually, and that's a tax return.
Right.
That is not a reality in most of Indian country. Some enterprises that work in and out of Indian country, they do, you know, have tax returns and the like. But if you think of a pretty straightforward example of a tribal fisherman who's out there harvesting under treaty rights for the different fisheries their tribe has rights to, the only real financial mechanism that captures their activity is what are called fish tickets. And that's based on generally poundage. It captures some monetary detail, but suffice it to say, it's pretty challenging for a traditional lender to go in and try and make heads or tails of the business activity and try and assess the risk associated with that. And I will tip my hat to Craft 3 for really making that a specialty of theirs and doing a lot of good work in Indian country.
How did you transition from Craft 3 to the EDC?
fortunately for me, previous transitions were ones that I wasn't looking for them, but it worked out to where I looked into them and they made sense for me to transition. The end of my tenure with Craft 3, which was at the end of 2015, I knew I was ready to get out of lending. I'd enjoyed the time doing that, but really wanted to take a break from that. And so I was able to kind of push pause on things, briefly work with a small business that my wife and I own in property management. And during that time, I was chatting with my predecessor, Peter Quinn, and the executive director at the chamber, Teresa Varis. And both of them had been keeping an eye on me, which was flattering to hear, and talked to them about opportunities with the EDC. And things worked out well. A position opened up, a new position, and I was hired as the deputy director in May of last year.
Can you tell us what the mission of the EDC is? Not everyone knows.
Yeah. Well, this is embarrassing, so I'm not going to be able to quote it verbatim, although I very well should. So if my board members are listening, my apologies. I will learn it and recite it at the next board meeting. But the general mission of the EDC is to build economic prosperity, vibrancy, and resilience in our community. And that's as multifaceted as you can interpret it, the role of what we touch and what we work on.
Can you use a concrete example of something that the EDC has helped in?
Maybe this isn't quite what you're asking, but something that's very common for me, something I do almost daily, is sit down and talk to either an existing or potential small business owner and provide technical assistance to them. And that could be simply going over a business plan that they've put together and asking questions or helping them identify potential gaps in that business plan, to getting ready to seek financing. And certainly given my background, I do enjoy helping to coach people through that process and hopefully position them to maximize their ability to obtain financing.
Yeah, well, you must be able to lead them through the forms pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah, I'd like to think so, and drop some, you know, perspective on them in terms of this is what a lender will be looking for. This is what an investor would be looking for. Really just try and shape, you know, their business to look at it through the eyes of somebody who's looking to invest or lend into it.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the challenges for the economy here, and one of the hot items is affordable housing. Is this something that the EDC considers? I mean, I don't know how you could help on that, but it's certainly a big issue for any business.
We talk about it just about every day, if not every day. The affordable housing issue that we're experiencing, not only in Jefferson County, but in our region, is a huge barrier to what we're trying to accomplish in terms of moving forward and building resilience. So our role could be as basic as helping to set the table or the conversation around affordable housing and identify who those partners may be. We're not housing developers ourselves, but we certainly know a few and can convene those stakeholders and try and identify potential gaps between what's the market demand and what's the opportunity. I can say unequivocally that just about every single main economic development effort or push is in some way or completely throttled by the lack of attainable or affordable housing. So it is a big priority for us and also for this community.
Yeah. So where does the EDC get its funding?
We get our funding through a variety of sources, primarily the Washington State Department of Commerce. Every 2 years, Jefferson County, at least previously, has designated the EDC as, here's a useless acronym of the day, an ADO, which is Associate Development Organization. You don't have to remember that. It's not going to serve you anywhere else
test.
In your life. Nope. But what that means is the designated economic development agency. And with that designation comes the allotment from the State Department of Commerce. Jefferson County themselves are a key contributor to us, as is the Port of Port Townsend and the City of Port Townsend, who provides our space at the Business Resource Center.
So your office is right down there next to the tourist office.
Right next to the visitor center, and right. Deliberately so. And that has definitely served us well in the past as far as people coming to visit the area, we're wanting to relocate, and they're but one door away from talking about how to move or expand or even start a business here.
Yeah. I can see how that would work. Now, one aid to development in this area is a rather unique organization, which is usually called Lion. And I know the EDC is involved with Lion. And can you just briefly tell us what Lion is and what your role is?
Lion is the Local Investment Opportunity Network. And you should remember that acronym. That's a pretty powerful one, in that this model started right here in Port Townsend and has since been replicated over the country and even throughout the world. So that's a badge of honor that we hold dear here. Lion's been active active for a little over 10 years. What it is a loose group of individual investors. And I want to stress individual only because these aren't group investors. This isn't a Shark Tank type of scenario. These are just folks in our community who have varying degrees of wealth that they're able to invest locally. There's some degree of a financial return motivation, but by and large, the main motivation for these investors is to leverage their dollars for local investment to build businesses here, generate wealth, and create jobs.
So how does the process work?
I'm sorry, I didn't touch on that, the EDC's role. Because Lion is little more than a networking group or a matchmaking service, if you will, EDC is happy to take on the administrative tasks associated with that. And so that means fielding applications that come in. If the business owners or the applicant is interested to do so, we love to sit down and talk with them and make sure, you know, they've answered all the questions they can. It's a unique application in that you don't discuss how much you're looking for. You just mention your business and try and articulate your expansion description, what you're looking to do. After that, we send it out. We email it out to the Lion investors, and they'll either follow up directly with that applicant. There'll be no response, which happens too, or they'll respond back to us and say, we're interested in a group presentation. If that's the case, and there's more than two Lion investors involved, coordinate for a presentation from that business.
That's cool.
To a group of investors.
So the way it works is that these individual investors, instead of, let's say, buying stock in Apple Computer, they instead invest in a local business, and they expect to make their money back and perhaps a profit. I suppose it doesn't always work, but hopefully it works more than it doesn't work.
By far. And fortunately, with local investment, there also comes a level of visibility and touch between the investor and the business that's unparalleled. So Lion has an excellent track record of the investments done in terms of successful repayment or a modified repayment that ended up being successful. And the Lion investors are looking to, again, deploy that capital to do good, get it back with maybe a little bit of interest earned, and then oftentimes redeploy that.
Right. Well, Brian, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. And I know one thing you said to me earlier sort of resonated. You now have three sons, and you were talking about wanting to make sure that there's an economic viability here so that if they chose, they could grow up and have good jobs right on the Olympic Peninsula.
That's exactly it. I love where we live. I absolutely love it here. My wife's from here. Two of my boys are from here. And so my selfish motivation is if they choose to go off to college or some military or career training, I want them and others like them to have the option to come back here and live a happy life here, raise a family if that's what they choose. I consider myself so fortunate to be able to live here. And so what motivates me to do the work I do on a daily basis is just making that accessible to other folks who have lived here.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest has been Brian Koo, who's the executive director of EDC Team Jefferson. That's the Economic Development Council. Brian and his team are working to help existing or new businesses grow and thrive in Port Townsend. Thank you so much again, and I also want to thank John McPherson, the editor of Our Town. You can't see him or even hear him, but he's the man who makes me and my guests sound so smooth and even intelligent. Thank you, John. I want to thank you, our listeners, for supporting community radio. We're an all-volunteer radio station here. We get no funding from any sort of government agency. Our support comes from you. And if you want to donate to the station, you don't have to wait for the pledge week. You can do it anytime. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. Keep listening for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.